Good morning, everybody. Welcome to Turning Towards Life. We are here live on Facebook. It's 9 a.m. on Sunday morning, and we are very happy to be with you and to have our source of this lovely poem this morning. Justin, do you want to say hello as well?
I want to say hello, everybody. Good morning. I'm going to let you in on where I am. I am hidden away in the conference room of a hotel where I'm staying with my family this morning. So I've found myself an empty room to sit in, which was a bit of a win because all of my family are asleep. It's Sunday morning. They're still tucked up in bed. And all the public places in this hotel that we're staying in are filled with piped music and people walking past. So anyway, I'm really, really pleased to be doing this from here. And one of the things that might, I suppose, happen this morning whilst we're talking is, who knows, somebody might come in and say, I'm not entitled to do this call from this room, and then who knows what will happen then. So we'll see what happens, but I'm delighted that we're doing this. This week, I've been thinking a lot about this poem that Lizzie's chosen because we spoke about it last week, so it's feeling very present and very alive for me. But the other thing I wanted to say, just by way of welcome, is it's been such a thing to feel 100 or so more people join us this week, and to know what it is to be bringing this conversation to an ever wider circle in the world. So I'm thrilled about all of that, and looking forward to what we're going to say to one another.
Okay, so we're going to go straight in. Actually, as Justin said, welcome anybody who hasn't been with us in our broadcasts before. It's often happens that Holly says something in Holly, that's my sister Holly, says something in her Presence of Love group. And so if you're from there, a very warm welcome to you. And we are very, very happy that you found your way to us. So our source for this week is The Swan. And I'm going to read it, and then Justin's going to read it, and then we're going to talk. The Swan by Rainer Maria Rilke. This clumsy living that moves, lumbering as if in ropes through what is not done, reminds us of the awkward way the swan walks. And to die, which is the letting go of the ground we stand on and cling to every day, is like the swan when he nervously lets himself down into the water, which receives him gaily and which flows joyfully under and after him, wave after wave, while the swan, unmoving and marvellously calm, is pleased to be carried each moment more fully grown, more like a king, further and further on.
The Swan by Rainer Maria Rilke. This clumsy living that moves, lumbering as if in ropes through what is not done, reminds us of the awkward way the swan walks. And to die, which is the letting go of the ground we stand on and cling to every day, is like the swan when he nervously lets himself down into the water, which receives him gladly and which flows joyfully under and after him, wave after wave, while the swan, unmoving and marvelously calm, is pleased to be carried, each moment more fully grown, more like a king, further and further on.
This is so beautiful, Justin. It's somehow reminding me of the other conversation we had. And I think we mentioned this while we were in Findhorn, while I was in Findhorn in Scotland. And as I recall it, we were speaking of our element in a way, like finding the element that we're in. And being encouraged by this poem to know that there is some water that might in some way suit us. And that. And in the reading now, this whole thing is occurring to me really quite that, and something really, really different as well. And I know we didn't read the full poem, and it was kind of a reference that you'd made. But it feels like such a small poem that has such a lot in it. And somebody said to me on a call the other day that I was doing in our coaching program, Justin, somebody said to somebody, I don't know if it was a philosopher or something, why was your answer so long? He said, because I didn't have time to make it short. And it really stuck with me that there's this kind of person, this kind of poet, who there's a potency in the shortness. And that's what it does to me, is that there's something about where we are, there's something about death and the ego. There's a way that our clumsy living is articulated. It just feels like there's so much here. And I'm just really grateful for how it's kind of throwing me and shifting me, just reading it.
There's so much to be said about how we might say, speak to the heart of things, and the art and responsibility of speaking to the heart of things. Mm. And I know in the deep joy I get through the tradition of studying text that comes down through the Jewish world, how frustrated I often get with modern writers who want to take a book to say something that somebody else said in three lines.
Yeah.
And left us with the responsibility. So here's the other part of it. Left us with the responsibility to work it out, rather than trying to, you know, lay out each part for us so that we would get it with no argument and no confusion. Yes. And but that's one of the amazing thing about Rilke's poems. And he's such a person worth reading and worth studying as well, because he got going with doing this when he was relatively young, and his poems that he wrote in his 20s are already extraordinary and beautiful. And it's and at the same time, the opening line of this poem also reminds me, and I think says so clearly, that the clumsiness that we experience in our day-to-day living is also very ordinary.
Yeah.
The sense that I know I've been in the midst of what feels like an enormous struggle with this for quite some time, and I still feel like I'm right in the heat and the heart of this, which is something like, when will I really understand what's mine to do? When will I be able to say it clearly? When will I know it clearly for myself? When will I be at the stage when somebody asks me, what are you up to? I can say it's this. When will I feel graceful with it? Mm. And how rarely I do, sometimes I do, and that's the second part of this poem, which is so extraordinary. But it really so often feels to me like my own life, no matter how I'm bringing myself to it, is exactly, as he says, clumsy living that's moving, lumbering, as if tied up in ropes through all the things that aren't yet done. And then to berate myself for it, or to feel ashamed, or worse, I think, to feel terrified by it. Like, by this stage in my life, I ought to have it sorted, I ought to know. And then my brackets is, the sort of secret thing is, the more people I speak to who apparently do know, the more it turns out that their lives are like this. Yeah. You know, the sort of image of having it all together and graceful movement for most of us. It isn't like that. I think it's like Rilke says.
Yeah.
And I'm glad for that, because I know I find it, what a relief it is to find out that it's life is inevitably this way too, and this act of turning towards and welcoming it that we've been talking about. And in fact, as I'm thinking about it this morning, Lizzie, this was also from a conversation I had with someone this week about that a stage beyond welcome is coming to something with curiosity and creativity and openness. The welcome is sort of like the prerequisite, but there's even beyond that. And even just the first line of this poem, knowing that a swan's, because it's really true, right? You watch a swan on the land and it's unbelievably ungainly. But we know, because we've seen swans, we know what they look like when they're in the water, and we know what they look like when they fly.
Yeah.
And to know that this clumsy living, encumbered by ropes, moving through all everything that's undone, is true and real and necessary and one aspect of what's going on. So I think that's the thing in this poem that I'm also moved by, is the sense that at the same time there's something else present, but it isn't that. I'm wondering if I'm saying this clearly enough, how it occurs to me, all the pain and rage and confusion that I know I feel about being clumsy and ungainly and all of that kind of stuff. It's not that that's something to be solved. It's more like it's something to be trusted, because the water is always nearby, and he doesn't talk about swans flying, so we'll stick with the water, but the water is right here also. I'm wondering what kind of sense that makes to you as I say it.
Yeah, there's I'm just feeling particularly moved by this kind of really human thing, which is like the sense of what's not done and how we're moving through our life with this big sense of, you know, with whatever we're doing, it's just occurring to me that maybe, like, it's a really common thing for people to feel like I should be somewhere else, or there's something that I should be doing that's mine and I don't know what it is. And that sense of being kind of displaced, or like I'm in the wrong family, or I'm in the wrong job, or I'm in the wrong marriage, or I'm in, you know, there's this like all this stuff about the what is not done, and that we clumsily kind of walking through our lives through that feeling. And somehow that's really kind of grabbing me. And the kind of compassion that's arising for me of the awkwardness of the situation that we're in, you know, is like, we, you know, this is where our body is, right here. And yet there's some kind of imagining that happens, some kind of outside of ourselves thinking that happens, if there's anywhere to be but here. Or, and I know that there are real questions about purpose and what is it that I'm supposed to be doing with my life. And as you say, when will I be clear? When will I have the thing that when I'm in an elevator and somebody says, what do you do? I can trip some little sentence off that's moving and accurate and representative, and which I feel happy with. It's like, you know, I wonder about whether that day will ever come. Mm. And yeah. And then, so that paragraph at the top, that section at the top is that bit. And then as the poem goes on as well, then it's like straight into dying. There's something about the kind of the juxtaposition of those things of, yes, we're in this kind of very humane human situation, or sometimes inhumane, the way we give ourselves a hard time. And then all of a sudden we're talking about letting go and dying, and that there is, as you say, something else here all the time as well. And that is so attractive, that feeling of suddenly plopping into the water and that being my element. That the swan didn't change. The swan didn't change its legs wibbling and bobbling around. It's just that the element is different. And that also feels like a a real possibility. And in a way, I feel like, you know, I've been talking about yesterday when I did the video with Holly yesterday on Presence of Love, which, by the way, if you don't know about that group and you want to find it, it's Presence of Love. And just put that into the search box and you'll find my sister and her wonderful group. Yeah, we were talking yesterday about, well, lots of bonkers things. And one of the things was that this presence is always here. There's always an opportunity to join with something deeper. And I was speaking about, I'd been asked by a client, Justin, about what my spiritual path was. And I found myself answering in the moment that my spiritual path is relationship. That relationship is my altar, is what I said. Like, this kind of community, this kind of conversation is the way that I experience my interconnectedness in the web of life from which we cannot fall. And this dying to the part of me that is not able to be in relationship, whichever person it's with, that feels like the invitation to me of this poem, which is really interesting because I actually hadn't, it hadn't occurred to me that it was connected to this. But what if the water that we can swim in that frees us is this, which is that I'm still going to be clumsy just because I come and talk to you and commune with you or anyone else doesn't mean I'm not clumsy anymore. It just means that my element makes it okay. Like, the acceptance of my clumsiness and my not knowing what to do with my life and whatever. What if the very nature of life is that in the connectedness, there's nothing to be changed, nothing to be fixed, because it really is welcomed.
This point you're beautifully making about relationship, I think, is absolutely implied by this poem. And I know that one way that sometimes people read this poem is that it's about death, as in the end of our physical lives. But it strikes me that we're talking about it also in a different way, which is about when something we've clung to dies, something we've been so sure about ourselves dies, and something else becomes possible. Yeah. And I started thinking, so in Rilke's language, the thing that changes is not the swan. The swan is the swan. Well, you know, the swan does change, but same swan.
Yeah.
In relationship with something other than what he in this poem was in relationship with before. So the swan in relationship with the land, yeah, is one way, and the swan in relationship with the water is another way, same swan. And that sometimes, and this way of talking about it came to me from hearing the poet David White talk about this poem as well, what I'm about to say, which is that sometimes the work that we have to do is to, it's an act of faith.
Yeah.
That keeping on going, and like you're saying, Lizzie, not tearing ourselves up in the process, keeping on going will with attention and care, afford ourselves the possibility that, oh my goodness, here I am. Like, so for example, one of the things that is so powerful and meaningful for me about having these conversations with you is that it is like, and we've said this to one another often in different language, it is like finding ourselves in the water. So however clumsy I'm feeling, however, as I often do, it's a very common experience for me to wake up in the morning with a kind of terror at what am I doing? How come I don't understand really what I'm up to? How come I don't understand really what life is, that I don't have it together in the way that apparently one is meant to in our culture, all of those things, the way it can feel. And I step into a conversation with you and I'm graceful again. Now, I'm no less confused in one way, and I'm no less ungainly in one way, and yet, wave after wave, I'm pleased to be carried, each moment more fully grown, further and further on, because of the what and who I'm in relationship to. And my other example of this that I was going to say, you were there, Lizzie, but I'll just say something about it for other people, was that I was, on Monday night of this week, I had the opportunity to talk in public at an event that This is Sister Holly and her husband Robert organized, and I got invited to be one of the speakers. And same thing, which was sitting there on the sidelines watching other people speak, feeling clumsy and ungainly, and what am I going to say, and clinging to my notes and wondering if I would even be able to get a coherent word out of my mouth. And then stepping out onto the stage in front of this and with this group of people in relationship with a crowd, and finding myself able to speak in this way, that what I had to say came gracefully, fully, not perfectly. So I don't mean some kind of magic perfection gets brought about. Maybe it can do, but more like finding ourselves unexpectedly in relationship in a way that allows our grace. And grace is what happens when we wait and trust enough. So that sense of grace to happen. And all of this is my long way of really echoing something that you just said, which is that it has a lot to do with the relationships we're prepared to allow ourselves to be in, and also a lot to do with the faith that we can have, that we may have been walking clumsily for a long time, only to find out, oh, here is what all this clumsy walking was for. I've been walking clumsily for 4 years, like it's been like the desert. But by continuing on this path and surviving it, the particular unique form of my clumsy waddling walk turns out that it has a form that is also graceful and can be infused by grace. In other words, it's all up to me.
Yeah.
Because of what I find myself in the midst of. And this is, I mean, just talking about it now, Lizzie, it's not like I knew I was going to say this morning, or that we were going to get into this conversation, but it seems very true and real as I'm speaking it, that this is the case.
Yeah. And it's also the case that this faith that you're talking of is necessary for lots of us to even get into a conversation or relationship around our clumsiness. Like the water, which is relationship, which is conversation, which is connection. It takes faith for us to let go of the narrative of independence, the narrative of I can sort this out myself, the narrative of I should be fine, the narrative of I should have this all sorted by now, I'm whatever age I am, and you know, it's so shameful for me to talk to anyone about it or experience anyone, you risk experience anybody's judgment that might poke into my judgment, and therefore I'll just feel more terrible about myself. So it really takes faith to even plop into the water. And you know that the part where Rilke says when he nervously lets himself down into the water, it's like to bring, I remember I brought something really quite tender to you the other day, Justin. And I remember the feeling of nervousness and tenderness and then relief as you didn't judge me, or I think something about my family, you know, something really shameful. And I remember that feeling of, you know, what it takes to come into relationship around stuff that you think is unrelationshipable, you know, that it's too far outside of the realms of acceptableness, and there's too many ramifications that someone might know something that's so under the rug. And it takes people's, all of our courage to be, like it took our courage, Justin, to be in this conversation of like, oh my gosh, well, you know, us just, you know, talking to each other and then seeing if anybody would like to be in it with us. That certainly took courage for me, and to be in the conversation each time because it's real and alive. It's not a scripted, sure, fixed thing. It's to have the faith in the fact that the water is here, and to step forward not knowing what conversation will come. And it never, it so far hasn't failed to amaze me that we have a source and I've got an idea about what might happen, and then it's completely different.
Yeah, right.
You know, I've really been reading this poem, and I've read it to a few people, and really thinking about it and everything. And then this isn't the conversation that I was imagining. And that's the nature of the water, is that it's not predictable. It's of what arises is of the unpredictable when we swim in it. And that's why it feels like it takes faith and courage, because you don't really know what's going to happen when you put yourself into a relationship with somebody. You really don't. It's accessing a part of us that's not our habitual, you know, commuter, doer, patterned person. It's something different.
What you just said, the very last thing that you said, I've had these, I know it sounds like the name of a sitcom, because it is, but the words will and grace going through my mind as you've been talking. Because the first part of the poem, the clumsy living that moves lumbering as if in ropes through what's not done, is really a description of will. You know, the exactly what you just said is that we find ourselves in the world with an endless list of things undone. Brackets, they'll come to a point, we'll come to a point in our lives when what's undone ceases to matter, which I think is always such an important thing to remember. But when we live as if the entirety of who we are and identity is this what's yet undone, there's a real place for will. It's really important. So many things. We have to build hospitals and schools, and we have to run government, and we have to raise families, and we have to earn, and we have to all these things that people have to do, and we have to create. And yet, in the midst of that, we so often experience our incompleteness and our not knowing and our confusion and all of this kind of stuff. And that when we also cultivate two things, being in relationship. So I think this is a matter of will, which is cultivating relationships around us where there's the possibility of grace, where we find ourselves. And that may be a conversation, it may be a community we find ourselves in, it may be a way that we shift the work we do in the world that brings us in contact with others. And it's reminding me of a conversation I had also in the last week with my friend Harla, who may be watching, who's joined this. And we were talking about this, and she said something really extraordinary to me, which was very life-giving and very much like this poem, which is, maybe everything that you've done in your life up until now is really just getting ready for the work that there is to be done. Like when the swan lets himself down. You read it, and I went nervously into the water and finds that the water receives him gladly and flows joyfully. That we are poisoned in a way by a story that's a very contemporary story in our culture, which is that by a certain point, your job is to know. And then the rest of your life is simply the doing of the thing that you knew, and that if you didn't get it to it by a certain point, you failed. Right? But there are endless other stories about what a life might be, including that a life might be one of faithfully trusting and getting on with being confused and doing your best in the midst of this and making relationships, and that the moment that you'll find out what is yours to bring, the moment when it begins, your unique something to bring, which will be grace, isn't something that you can plan for.
No.
And if we all were to live the planned for life, what wonders and gifts and healing would be denied to the world?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and the bit that's moving me in what you're saying, Justin, is that each moment we're more fully grown. Like to be in the water is naturally growing. And that to have this kind of faith in what that water is and what it can be, that isn't, you know, somebody wrote yesterday, actually, I think it was on Holly's page, that, you know, my biggest limiting belief is that fear will keep me safe. And that really spoke to me as like, there's this weird paradox of like, well, if I just stay on the land, everything will be fine. And then that is one way of clumsily moving through life. And to find a way of having the courage to feel into the water and nervously let ourselves down, it has growth inherent in it. Just by the act is growing. The act of faith is a growing matter. Yes. And then while we swim in the unknown, growth is of that nature. It's a natural byproduct of faith in the unknown, in the faithfully stepping in when we don't know what the hell's going to happen. And as you're speaking, it's just really encouraging me, encouraging us, it feels, in our connectedness to something other than our panic and fear and rage, and it's all welcome, but there's a big and in it. And to turn towards the and, which is like a blank space, but which holds so much growth, life, faith, God knows what in it. I'm feeling like really interested in that right now.
Saying. I love this faith to turn into the unknown.
Yeah.
And it's making me think of a couple of really things that feel really important to me at this moment in our history, our shared history. So Ursula Le Guin, probably my favourite author, died last week. I think we might have mentioned this when we spoke last week. And I think we should read some Le Guin at some point.
Yes.
And she has this extraordinary thing she's talking about there, at some point maybe in a talk that she gave, where she's talking about the systems in which we live right now. So she's talking about a particular form of capitalism we live in and the way we've structured our society. And she says, it's a story. It's one, it's a choice that we made. She doesn't mean it's a story like we could all just get up and say, well, we're done with that story and that would be smooth or something like that. But she says we lived our way into this story, and there's a point at which we have to live our way into another one. And in what you just said, Lizzie, I think is something that seems so important, which is that the clumsy living where we're moving, lumbering, one of the traps we can get into is saying, I am in so much difficulty because I'm not yet skillful at walking on the land. I have to make myself walk better here, which is never going to work out for a swan.
Yes.
The work of the swan is to be as open as possible to the possibility that there might be water and to seek it, knowing that everything that you just said so beautifully, that what happens, that when we find ourselves in a different medium, we can be in life in a different way. That maybe part of our work is, we've been talking about trust, like if I just keep going the particular form that I, trusting the particular shape that I am, which is David White's words, with all of its difficulties, that I will eventually find out what all of that is for. Oh, it turns out that I'm here to swim.
Yeah.
My goodness. But that also that there is, and I think that this project is very much part of this, there is work for us to do to keep ourselves open to the other medium, the other story, rather than just continually trying to force ourselves into, like, maybe I'm in pain because the story in which I'm living, the structure in which I'm living, isn't serving me or other people. And that's what faith is also, is that we will find another way by taking care of our relationships and our conversations and the kind of presence we are and the kind of welcome we are in the world and the kind of curiosity we're prepared to be, and not just being caught up and convinced by our lumbering clumsiness and all the harshness we feel to ourselves because we're so clumsy.
As usual, it's just really inviting to be in this inquiry. I'm so grateful.
Me too. And look, I survived in my secret conference room. Nobody asked me to leave, so I'm really glad to have been here for the whole time.
Well done for your sophisticated location. Very clever. Okay, so I'm thinking that we should end there. We're at 35 minutes. And we'll be back next week at 9 o'clock on Sunday if Justin's not in a hotel without a conference room.
I think I'll be home next Sunday. I want to say thank you to everyone for being with us. And I want to make a very small parting technical request, which is, as you may know, we in the end make the recordings of these conversations available on our YouTube channel. And we are five people short of moving into the next stage where we can have our own address for our YouTube channel. So if you're watching this and you're part of our Facebook group and you haven't yet subscribed to the YouTube channel, it will help us enormously in getting this work more widely into the world. If you would just have a look for the link, which we'll post, and just subscribe to the channel, that would be a wonderful boost for us. And thank you, everyone.
Thank you, everybody. See you next week.
Bye.